Blog Talk Radio.
Patriot Nation Radio Live, 347-637-3942.
Number 347-637-3942. 347-637-3942 if you want to call in. Today's guest will be Dr. Aaron Shivington. He has a new book called Moving Toward Jesus, A Five-Step Guide to Discipleship. But before we go there, a little promo. I love that promo that Mark Hoffman made up. It's pretty awesome. So anyway, welcome to the American Allegiance Show. Your host, Kevin White, also part of the Patriot Nation Radio Network. We rock, don't we? Having a new DJ, as you want to call it, joining us sometime in the near future. And you may have other spots, I don't know. That's not my business. I'm not the boss, so I can't tell you. So beautiful day. Today I spent time in the garden. I like to have my survival garden ready when I need it, just in case. You know, you got to have self-sustainment if you can. You never know what's going to happen because right now we see the shelves are emptying and baby formula is not there, but I'm sure there are other alternatives. And that's you taking your part, growing your own garden. And that's the very last line of my book, Growing Up White, Moria's Got to Fit In. Brought to you by BrianFoxPublishing.com, and that is cultivate your own garden. And that's what the famous philosopher from the 1800s. So without any further, I hate saying that, ado. Here we go. We're going to bring our guest on, Dr. Aaron Shivington. Dr. Shivington, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kevin. It's good to be here with you.
Awesome. So you recently released your book. I'm talking about myself, Brownie Fox Publishing. We are growing our author pen stable, if you want to call it, and our book count. So this is our newest published author, Dr. Aaron Shivington. Can you tell us about your book?
Yeah, it's a five-step guide for discipleship, basically saying, hey, if I said, I want to know Jesus. I want to know what does it mean to be a Christian. I want to know how do I take the next steps in my relationship. Here would be the first five steps. Now, we call them steps basically because we each have a different starting place. So if someone comes from a church background, but it was very legalistic, where it was about the rules, not the relationships, Jesus meets every one of us where we are. So he meets that person where they are and invites them to move towards him. That's why it's called moving toward Jesus. Someone else may be coming from an abused relationship where they have no knowledge of the Bible, no church experience. Jesus meets them where they are. Someone may be coming from a relationship where they were actually a pastor's kid, but again, it was a terrible experience with the church, and so Jesus meets them where they are. Someone may be in the church for 15, 20 years, and they're going, I still don't know, like, how to move closer to Jesus, and so Jesus meets them where they are. And everybody has the same basic five steps, and again, we call them steps because it's about moving toward Jesus. It's about directional, not here's what you have to do first, second, third, and the steps are then often repeated. There's no, hey, you graduated, here's the certificate, you're now the super Christian. It's, hey, we're moving towards Jesus, and it's a constant journey towards Jesus.
Right, and I like how you have that stepped out. This is a guide. I like the fact that this is a guide to where you have all the parts together, the different chapters, and you explain everything thoroughly. And I like that because a lot of people need that. You know, some people won't read books. They'll kind of like lose themselves in it in the first, 50 pages or something. But This right here is like, hey, I can pull this out anytime while I'm in each step, and I can live that step and move on to the next one when I'm ready. I think that's pretty nice.
Right, and what you may find is that you're in step one, but you're also working on step four at the same time. There's no again, it's one of the reasons that I wrote this was over the 25 years of ministry that I've been in, I've done a lot of research and used a lot of different discipleship programs, and I don't want to sound like I have a great hubris here, but I didn't like any of them. And so we said, well, what would you like? And possible in 10 years, I'll go, I don't even like my own stuff. But so many of the programs we saw were like, hey, you've completed this class, you've completed this regiment, you've completed, and discipleship's not something you complete. And again, so many of the classes that we saw, or so many of the models that we looked at, had this idea of, everybody's beginning at first base, or everybody's beginning at this location, and we really didn't feel like that was true. So we sought to create something that could meet people where they are, which is what we believe Jesus does. Wherever you're at is where Jesus meets you and invites you forward from that point.
Absolutely. I like how you say that, and that is true. A lot of people don't grasp that, or they forget about it. Jesus meets you. He knows what you need and what you don't need and when you need it. And that's exactly, I mean, everybody he spoke to, you know, while he was living, everybody had a different level of need, or he knew how to approach them. He knew.
Right.
So
right.
I think that's what this book tries to emulate, and it does. And I like that, because almost like a self-tailoring, and you make that happen for yourself.
Right. It really is. You've got to work through some of these steps on your own. And we have questions at the end of each chapter to really kind of say, hey, did you get this? How are you processing it? And then we have five steps, but there's also a sidetrack chapter of apologetics as well, because when we talk about what does it mean to move closer to Jesus, and I'm big into apologetics, which is simply giving a defense of the faith. 1 Peter 3:15 says we should all be prepared to give a reason for what we believe and why we believe it. And I see so many young Christians, or so many people who start out kind of chasing Jesus, or who aren't sure. And so we have this section in the book really early where we say to people, hey, here's why what you're believing and whom you're moving toward can be trusted. And so it would be like inviting someone, hey, come on this boat journey with me who's never heard of a boat, or who doesn't know if the boat can sink. You know, the boat looks a little shaky. I've heard all these rumors about all these people who get into that type of boat and it sinks, or sharks get them, or, you know, there's all kinds of trouble. And so we wanted to early on give people also a firm foundation that's kind of an intro into apologetics of why they can trust Jesus, because, again, the idea is that, as we say with the second step, everything is relational. It's about the rules. It's about the relationship, not the rules. Well, if I'm going to have a healthy, an intimate, healthy, passionate, growing relationship with Jesus, I need to know that I can trust him and he's going to be there for me.
You're right. It's almost like you marry somebody and you never talk to them.
Absolutely.
And also that relationship falls apart. So, and then, I mean, you have to communicate. That's right.
In fact, again, if you think about the steps, they're constantly building on kind of the next level of trust. And often I'll use this metaphor or imagery when we talk about moving towards Jesus, is that, again, he meets you where you are and invites you into a relationship. And I love the Gospel of John, because one of the concepts and phrases that's often used in the Gospel of John is Jesus inviting you to trust him. And so we have a God who understands that we live in the midst of broken relationships, that we all have been wounded, that we've all been hurt by other people. And so we don't have a God who doesn't understand that. And we also have a God who understands that there's many false religions and false, if you will, spirits out there that are vying for our attention. And so God meets us where we are and says, all right, walk with me. I'm going to teach you to trust me. I'm going to teach you that you can put your faith in me, and I'll handle that. I will guard your heart.
So where I see this is going, personally, I think what you have, this is something that, and I think we've talked about this before, that sometimes the pastor is not there. He doesn't give you, you know, direction. People have so many questions, and they want to be disciples, but there's no constant, you know, hey, this is what you do. Sometimes there's no classes, especially in the time of pandemic and things like that for some churches. So I see this as being something every new Christian should have.
That's a hope. And let me tell you where I see most people get into trouble. So because most people who are disciples of Christ never really had a clear, like, this is how we start, we all have either made it up or built on some kind of, this is where I'm at now. And so what we do is someone becomes a Christian and we immediately give them this huge caseload of all the things they got to do and all the things they got to change. And, okay, you need to be reading your Bible 15 times a day. You need to be at church on Sunday. You need to be part of this small group on Tuesday and Thursday. You need to be serving in this capacity on Saturday. And pretty soon they're overwhelmed with really what's, again, rules and regulations. And I begin to feel like, well, I can't follow Jesus because I can't do all those things. I can't follow Jesus because I can't give up all these things. I understand Jesus wants me to give up this and this and this, but it's all so overwhelming. And what we do is we actually drive people away from the joy of following Christ, the freedom of grace, and kind of this Christianity becomes legalistic. And so we, because of where we're at or because of our background, we start people kind of in the middle of our steps and we burden them. And so what we've attempted to do with the book is kind of go back to the model that Jesus gave, which was, okay, we start with just recognizing I need Jesus. And so Jesus always invited people to recognize their need for him. And then again, how do we move into that relationship? And all those other things will come, you know, scripture reading, and we call those spiritual disciplines. All the spiritual disciplines will come, but we don't want to burden people immediately and again, have them lose sight of what it means to be in a relationship with God. So many people that I talk to on a regular basis have left the church, have left the faith because of, again, I use the word legalism, kind of this overemphasis on rules and not about the relationship. And I just tell people, it's like this. When I fell in love with my wife and we started dating, we didn't sit down and, okay, what's the 300 rules I need to know in order to date you, right? What we did was we started by simply saying, hey, I like you. I trust you. Of course, we got to the point where we started to say, I love you. And I wanted to honor her. I wanted to respect her. I wanted to care for her. And in that, I lived by the rules, not because she sat down and laid them out for me, although sometimes we had to clarify expectations, but simply because I was so madly in love with her and still am, that I wanted to live in a specific way that honors her. And so, again, if we start out with a relationship and not the rules get included. They get thrown in, right? But if we start out with all the rules, we overwhelm people. And the relationship suffers and ultimately dies because we started with the wrong step.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes the reason I say this could be huge is because sometimes people are so far ahead, like you said, of the basics, they can't help the new people that come in, or they assume so many things. And something like this guy could be perfect. Hey, you get saved. Here's a guy. You need to read this. Some churches actually do that, but most of them don't. So
right.
I like how this approach precedents.
Yeah, we're planning on using it for anyone who comes to church and, again, wants to be part of the church, wants to, again, even has questions because we have the section on apologetics. Like, well, what does it mean to follow Jesus? Well, here's a guide for you. But, yeah, it could be used as a class, and that's what we're going to do. But it also can be used for individuals. And you're right. So many people, again, have not taken the time to study, okay, we all know we should be leading people to Jesus, or, again, we like to say moving them closer to Jesus. well, what does that look like and how do I do that? And again, what we've done is create steps, not here's the formula that fits all circumstances, but rather here's the steps. So everybody should be moving this direction, regardless of where you're at. Here's what your first step would look like. Here's what your second step could look like. And again, there's not a formula, but it could be used in many different situations and many different forms. And again, I'm hoping that churches pick it up and individuals pick it up and want to use it as part of their intro to discipleship and introduction to Jesus type classes.
Yeah, I think that's that would be a really good goal. You could take this book with you on the road. And I think a lot of people would be very interested in, because this is like perfect, because there are things in this book. For example, you're talking about apologetics. You have a section there. There are a lot of adults who don't know what apologetics is. So you're going to put them like way ahead of a lot of people that don't know, because people don't talk about it. You know, you might have had it, you know, with your career or anything, but there are people that don't have an idea, don't have a clue. And so that's an important thing when you're proving the validity and everything of your religion. And that's something that's going to be beneficial in the long run for all these new Christians. And I can see this. I can see you really going a lot further than you think, than just your congregation.
Yeah. And let me give you an example, Kevin, of just one story where we use the apologetics. And again, I would argue that you use it everywhere, and it breaks my heart that more pastors don't have a focus on this, because our society now is the first biblically illiterate culture, in the sense of we have kids that are in high school and junior high and even college who have no idea about the biblical stories. And so often we want to begin to have conversations or arguments, and by arguments I don't mean getting in fights, but rather, hey, let me help prove this concept to you. But we start with the Bible. And it's the wrong place to start with someone who doesn't believe in God, because you might as well pull out Mother Goose and Grimm fairy tales. Why? Well, I don't believe in your God, therefore I don't believe in your Bible. So you're giving me an argument from a book about fairy tales, right? And so, you know, here's one example. I do this all the time, and I take people out for lunch or breakfast, and we're sitting down, and I'm talking to this lady, and she says to me, you know, I don't believe in God. I don't know why I'm here. And I said, well, that's okay. I said, first of all, I just want to become friends and get to know you. And so we spent about a half hour just talking about her life story and some of the situations and her breakup and her marriage and how tough it is being a single mother and some of the bills she had to pay and her parent, one of her parents was dying. So we just kind of walked through her story for a while. And again, it was interesting. She came back and said, now, all that being said, you know, I don't believe in God. And I said, well, tell me about the God you don't believe in.
Right.
And she began to describe this God who, again, was vindictive, that, you know, when she had sinned or messed up, God held that against her and had purposely caused her father to have dementia, and now he was dying, that God sabotaged her marriage because of this situation. And she just kind of listed off all these things where this God was kind of this evil, moralistic Santa Claus, if you will, that, you know, had been making a list and checking it twice. And because she wasn't nice enough, God was now getting her. And so we end that conversation, and I say to her, I go, after she's done explaining to me, again, the God that she doesn't believe in, I said to her, I go, you know, I don't believe in that God either. And she was just stunned and silenced, right? Because she's like, didn't know where to go. Now, I don't want to take credit for this. This is all tools that I've learned from Greg Kokel and other great leaders that have mentored me. But she was just kind of stunned and silenced. And she finally goes, well, what do you mean you don't believe in that God either? And I said, what? I said, the God that I know and the God that has been revealed in Scripture isn't like that. And I said, so the person or the deity that you're describing, I don't believe in either. I said, I hurt for you, and I hurt that somehow your view of God's been so bent that you think God's out to get you. I said, what it sounds to me like you've been believing in is kind of a moralistic Santa Claus, and I just don't believe in that either. I said, I believe in a Jesus who hurts with you. I believe in a God who has created all things perfect, but because of sin, things are not as they ought to be. And I said, your destruction of your marriage is not as it ought to be. And the fact that you know that it's not right is evidence that God exists, because you have an idea of how marriage ought to be. That's called a divine ought. And so we spent the next 10 minutes kind of walking through, okay, then who is the real God? Now, she opened the door for me to do that. I hadn't pushed her. I hadn't tried to get her to read Bible verses. And so what I did is I just started out with logic and reason. And then eventually I began to move her towards Jesus. Again, the title of the book, Moving Toward Jesus.
Right.
And so then we get done and she says to me, so what if I want to know this God? What do I do next? Well, I didn't have the book done at that point in time, but I sent her kind of this rough draft copy that I had and said, hey, let's just keep moving on a meeting together on occasion. And I said, this will be great because you'll help me walk through kind of some of these concepts in the book. And so we have been. And it's been really challenging for her and really exciting for me because she keeps coming with all these questions and all these doubts. And, again, the beauty of the steps is that – you know, someday she's on step three and she'll call me up and she'll be totally like, I don't believe in God anymore. He's not here. Things are going bad. And I'm like, okay, we're back to step one. It's okay. And we walk through that. And so, again, what we have is the ability to meet people where they are with the apologetics and help them move towards Jesus without jamming the Bible down their throat or making them feel stupid because they don't already know something.
Right, because a lot of people, yeah, they don't understand the Jesus relationship, so they assume the God of the Old Testament that destroyed everything that was his enemy is what's still around today. Because you have people say, well, I believe in a God that would cause these tornadoes and cause all the famine and all this stuff, or I don't believe in one that would take my son away or something like that. So they don't really understand.
And we say to them, yeah, I don't really believe in that God either. Again, what we have to help people understand is not everything happens the way God wants it to. Now, people get afraid when I say that because they're like, well, wait a second, is your God all powerful? And yes, he is. But again, from the very beginning of Scripture, we see God telling Adam and Eve, don't eat the fruit, and then they eat it. Everything happens the way God wants it to. And that's why Paul talks about we're in a spiritual war. And so I like to remind people that God doesn't win every battle. Not everything happens the way God wants it to. Now, the war, again, the bigger picture is never in question. God wins that. In fact, he's already won it if we understand that God is outside of time, space, and matter. God's already won it because he's like someone reading the novel. We're in the middle of the novel. And we don't know how it's going to end, except that God's already told us. But God's already read the novel. He's already wrote the story. So I tell people, like, hey, that God who, you know, you think causes tornadoes and causes people to get sick, and that's not a real understanding of how things work. Sin impacted everything, and now we live in a culture that is disease-ridden, that is virus-ridden, that is evil-ridden because we chose sin over trusting in God. And unfortunately, a lot of Christians say the wrong things, and then we got to go back and say, yes, I'm sorry that someone said God brought the hurricane. You know, when the hurricanes came, Hurricane Katrina, I remember there was a pastor who said, God's making New Orleans pay for their sins. And I thought, oh, my gosh, you're causing the rest of us who read the Bible and understand God more work. That's not what's going on.
You know, they just happen to live in a virtual bowl of water. They're prone to it. So, I mean, if you live, you know, places like that, you expect that to happen. So, yeah, I dismiss that as anything like that. Just the way you are. If you live on a fault or a tornado alley, you're going to get earthquakes and tornadoes. That's just how the earth is. So, yeah, I don't buy into that. And that's not something God would do. And also, the God of this world has a lot of stuff to do with this anyway. So you got to remember, and the key is God's role is one thing. Jesus' role is to save mankind. So, and that's what we need to do. Or that's the whole point of discipleship. to follow him. So, yeah.
Kevin, the arguments that we're talking about right now are really moral arguments, and what we have is a lot of people who think of God as, again, kind of this moral evil monster. In fact, that's probably the best argument against God emotionally. From an intellectual standpoint, you couldn't know that something evil was happening or that it was wrong or, again, not as it ought to be unless there's an objective truth and unless God exists. We couldn't say that's wrong. It would just be an opinion statement. But the best argument against God, I believe, isn't an intellectual one. It's the emotional one. And I write about this in the book when my sister died of cancer. We have people say stupid things like, God has a plan and a purpose for everything. And you want to pause and go, so God's like desire was for my sister to die of cancer and leave her 3-year-old son without a mommy. Like, is that really what you want to say? Is that really what you believe? And I get that in the midst of crisis, people don't know what to say. And often we say stupid stuff rather than just sit in silence and grieve with someone. But when it comes to, why does God allow cancer? Why did God allow mommy to die of this? Why did God allow grandpa to get dementia? Why did God allow me to get Parkinson's? Again, we're back into the idea that we're in a fallen world. And things are not as they ought to be. And here's where this fits historically. If we look back to when Jesus came to the earth, the Jewish people were looking for a Davidic warrior king who was going to set things right on earth.
Yeah.
And so they're constantly missing Jesus claiming to be God because he doesn't fit their preconceived idea of what they think God should do. And I love the fact that we all have that. Like, this is how God should behave. This is what God should do. And so the Jews of Jesus' time often missed Jesus because he didn't destroy the Roman armies. He didn't heal everybody. He didn't bring an everlasting peace at that moment. But Jesus didn't come to do that. He came because eternity is more important than the temporary. And he says, one day I'm going to come and I will set things right when I come back. But it's like when John the Baptist is in jail and he's going to die. And Jesus says to him, as John sends messengers to Jesus, like, and I love the fact that John the Baptist, Jesus' cousin, John the Baptist, who, when he baptized Jesus, heard the voice from the sky say, "This is my son, whom I love, I am well pleased." Like, if anybody knew who Jesus was and had a secure faith without a reason of doubt, it should have been John the Baptist. But John the Baptist is in jail. He's facing his death, and like he's kind of like, man, I kind of had these expectations of what the Messiah was going to do and who he was. And so he sends some of his disciples to ask Jesus, "Are you the one, or should we expect another?" And Jesus' response, often we don't get it in English, and so I like to translate it in street terms, but he quotes Isaiah, a passage out of Isaiah that says, when the Messiah comes, he's going to heal the blind, he's going to preach the good news to the poor, the lame will walk, the blind will see, etc. And then he makes this powerful statement, "John, blessed are you if you don't fall away on account of me." And what he's really saying is, John, you are blessed if when I don't behave like Santa Claus and do what you want me to do, how you want me to do it, when you want me to do it, you still have faith in me. He's saying, John, I didn't come to get you out of jail and save you from this temporary death. John, I came for a bigger purpose. Don't lose faith just because I don't look like what you want, and I'm not abolishing evil, all evil now. My first goal and priority is to abolish sin so that you can reconnect with God.
Right. Yep. That's awesome. So getting back to your book, okay. So how long did this take you to write? You were saying, I know that you were going to have a publication for your church, and then I asked if you wanted to publish this and make it for bigger audiences, which is the goal sometime down the road. And so I know that you had some adjusting to do before you sent it to me.
Yeah.
So So what kind of things did you change? Because I didn't see, I think I only saw a little bit of the first. So how did you tailor this into the big picture?
Yeah, a couple of things. It took me 3 years to write, and my father was a huge help in this, in the sense of he's the pastor and was constantly going through and saying, hey, bring more clarity to this. And my wife also did a lot of editing because I have ADHD, and often I can't type as fast as I think. So I'm thinking two pages ahead, and then I lose train of thought where I'm at. But and so what happened was is that we were getting ready to kind of use this and launch this within our church, and we were just going to go down to UPS and run a bunch of this off. And when you kind of offered me the opportunity to be part of your team, what I said was, hey, does this make sense to everybody who isn't sitting listening to me every Sunday and not being discipled by members of our church? And so then we stepped back and said, okay, if we're going to take it to the national level, again, let's clean up and make sure it's always understandable, make sure it flows a little better, and again, make sure that none of the inside language is used. How would we say it if it were going to be used for everybody, which we try to do all the time anyways, but, you know, anytime you're part of an organization, you have certain language and words that you use that everybody nods their heads and understands. And so in the book, we had to explain some of that language. And again, just that term, things are not as they ought to be, is kind of a key phrase that we use in theology. And so we had used that several times in the book without giving it a great deal of explanation. And so then we had to go back and say, hey, look, this is how we got to where we're at. This is why we believe this. And so, yeah, it took us a while to clean it up and have more people read it who weren't connected to the church. So we sent it out to a handful of people who weren't part of our group and said, all right, where does this not make sense to you? And so then we got all that feedback and began kind of re-editing and retooling. And I'm the type of guy that's never satisfied with it. In fact, one of my mentors finally said to me, he's like, hey, eventually you got to live with what you got and move on and start writing the next thing, because you'll tinker with it the rest of your life. And he goes, that's beautiful because it's a living project for you. But he goes, eventually you got to go, this is what I got right now today. Come back and do a 10-year anniversary edition of it and leave what you got good enough.
Yeah, I know how that is. I redid my first book, and but the good thing is, yeah, things are starting to turn. So I'm getting more speaking engagements coming up. But here's the thing: that's what you should be doing. I think you would be a great speaker on this subject since you wrote the book, and you could actually explain this. This is what we have. We're offering it. You could even, you know, give it a discount as a speaker. You always bring your books with you, and
yeah,
then to go from
I
there.
I would love
then,
the opportunity to do that.
Okay, yeah, great.
Yeah, so we use an acronym in the book kind of to give the first five steps. And we thought since it's moving towards Jesus that we would just use the name Jesus. But we start with the J. Everyone needs Jesus, or recognizing our need for Jesus. Everything is relational. S, safeguard relationships. U, understanding God. And S, again, sanctification. So it's an easy way for us to remember the five steps. This is just remember the name of Jesus. And it really is easy to teach and easy to move through and easy to remember, which was, again, one of the key things and kind of the rewrites we did that final year was to go back and say, okay, how do we make this really simple so that everybody can get this and get it immediately, not, hey, I've had to sit through, you know, a 12-week class, or I had to really, you know, go back and read this three times in order to understand it.
Right, and the gospel should be simple. And, like, people get these ideas that they have to speak certain ways and that they've arrived, and I think that's totally bogus. So
Right. Making
it easy for people to read, just like the Bible, is what, I mean, that's the whole thing. The whole concept is simple, that anybody can grasp it. And I like the way your book is written. It's perfect. It's not like trying to make yourself look super scholarly or anything, but it's right there where people need it. It's right there in the strike zone. That's where it is.
So, well, thank you.
Right,
I'm honored to hear that and blessed.
So, yeah, and I appreciate what you're doing. The reason the reason I'm saying this is because this is what's so needed these days. And I remember you talked about this a few months ago. And my comment was, wow, that's pretty awesome. That's something that we don't see. People only have their Bible, which the Bible is great, but they don't have the understanding of how to become a disciple. And even, you know, this should tailor to like any denomination. This is discipleship. So I think this is a great thing you're doing here.
Yeah, there's no, like, this is Catholic or this is Methodist or this is Pentecostal. Anybody could use it because I tried intentionally to stay out of kind of some of those small issues that divide us as churches. And again, I'm very clear when I say that. I think the issues that divide us as churches and denominations are small. I always tell people, hey, if you have a relationship with Jesus and that's who God is, then we're brother and sister and we're good to go. But, you know, our fourth step of discipleship is a correct understanding of God. And we often make it so complicated, but it's not. It really isn't that difficult when we boil it down to who God is. Now, as with any relationship, the longer I live into it, the more complicated it can be because I've grown so much. And I can't go back to my wife. When I first met her, I didn't know much about her. I didn't know how to please her. I didn't know what she liked. I didn't know what she expected from me. But now after several years of marriage, I have a pretty good idea of what pleases her. And our relationship is much more complex, but the complexity is the depth of the relationship. The complexity is what brings about even more beauty. It's not that it became more complicated, but rather we understand each other that much better.
That's right.
So at night we still say, I love you. Yeah, at night we still say, I love you, good night. We don't go into a long syllogism of something that we need to make because it's complicated. but rather, we just simply understand that when I say I love you, it means so much more now because of the life we've shared. And so, again, when we talk about the complexity, it's about my relationship with Jesus has grown so much, and I understand so much more about God that it's not that it's complex. It's just we're deeper. We're bigger than we once were.
It's like, you know, you can come to him as a child, you can believe like a child and go from there instead of having your own ideas. A lot of people are shutting themselves out of things like this unless they run into a brick wall. I think sometimes you have to get rid of yourself, your thoughts. And then that's another reason I like this, because people just don't understand. I've seen it happen a lot. Yeah, you are a new member to our church. I'm going to put you in the choir. I'm going to do this. But you have no idea. You have no idea how things work. That's one thing that's probably the most under-explained discipleship is not taught. It's like an individual thing. And they don't – it's nothing like I see in your book. So this is a great help. This right here, I would love. I mean, this is a worldwide thing. If you can get it translated, this would be awesome to have. So that's a possibility.
Your example is a great example of just the danger of church burnout. You know, we bring people in. We have needs. We want them to experience ministry. We don't take the time to understand where people are gifted at, where, hey, if you didn't have to work and you could just do something that would bless God and be fun, what would you do? And that's where people need to be plugged into ministry. And part of understanding that for yourself is looking in the mirror and, again, having walked the first five steps so that you're not trying to earn God's favor. You're not serving so that you're making God happy or the pastor's happy. You're serving simply because you love Jesus and this is what you're called to do. With so many people, again, we just don't start out at the right place in our discipleship. And so where we go is, hey, I know that I have to earn good grades in school. I have to earn my paycheck. I have to earn and many of us have been in relationships where you had to earn the affection. You had to earn someone's attention. You had to earn the pleasure or the delight of someone. And so we often unfortunately translate that worldview to God and the church, where now I'm earning God's love. Now I'm earning God's attention. Now I'm earning God's affection. And again, all that goes back to, okay, somewhere in your early discipleship steps, you took the wrong one. You thought you were now, again, paying or deserving of God's grace if you behaved good enough. Well, it's not grace and love if you have to earn it, or if it's something that if you can be good enough, you get. And so we often see people burn out. We often see people leave the church, because if you're living in a works concept of the relationship, it's unsustainable with God. It just cannot be committed to long term, because you've missed grace. You've missed the whole concept. The only world religion that doesn't have a works-related base model is Christianity. And the base model of Christianity is Jesus died for you. He paid the price for your sins. You can't earn God's love. You can't earn God's forgiveness. You can't earn God's grace. It's given to you as a gift. Please just accept it. Fall in love with Jesus, and everything will change.
Absolutely. I want to ask you a question. I'm going to change gears here, switch gears. Let's talk about your church. So tell us about your church and your ministry and how you got in it and what you did before that.
Yeah, so I started out my career in ministry as a United Methodist pastor and served many years there. And my story personally is kind of one of tragedy and heartbreak. Without going into all the details, and some of them are in the book, but we had a really dark moment in our lives. I was coaching basketball, and some of the kids on the team didn't want to play team sports, and they didn't want me to coach junior high basketball anymore, and so they made all these false accusations against my family and against me. And then what happened was we had 7 foster kids with us at that time that we were ready to adopt. Like, hey, in the next month or two, we're going to sign papers, and these kids are going to have our last name. They're going to be part of our family for good now. They're not going to bounce around anywhere. And when those 2 athletes, you know, made those false accusations, Children's Services swept in. Took them out, and not blaming Children's Services. They were just being precautious. But there was an investigation. 3 different organizations investigated me, and at the end of the day, I sat down with the detective, and she said, what you had was 2 kids who didn't want you to coach, and I'm sorry they tried to destroy your life.
Wow.
Well, my wife and I at the time, yeah, and again, that investigation lasted almost 6 months, and it was just an example of, in our culture, you can say anything you want about someone without having any evidence of truth. And again, it was just absolutely tragic. It was heartbreaking. And since then, I've been able to minister to many people who, again, have been teachers, have been coaches, who have been in the public square where somebody has said something, and it doesn't take much to destroy a reputation in our Me Too culture. But I think we're starting to see the pendulum swing back the other way, where people are going, hey, not every accusation can we take serious till it's investigated, which is a biblical thing to do, so I encourage people to do that. But well, for us personally, what happened then was, remember, we lost 7 kids overnight, and that was 7 deaths. And as my wife and I at the time worked through the grief and the pain of that, I'll be the first to tell you, we didn't always handle it well, and we struggled with that, and we sought counseling, we sought help, but you can't prepare to lose 7 kids, and that's what it was for us. And in the next 2 to 3 years, we weren't able to stay together. We finally ended up with a divorce, and it was heartbreaking. I don't believe that divorce is God's plan for marriage, and it was absolutely destructive. And we moved on from there and began to, again, to continue to heal and to move forward. In the midst of that, there were some leadership issues that I just felt like, hey, we needed to leave the Methodist Church. And I remember sitting down with God at night saying, I'll do anything but be a pastor. If you'll allow me to do anything, I'll go do anything you want. Just don't leave me here and keep calling me to do this. Which people always tell me is a dangerous thing to tell God you'll do anything but, right?
Right.
And so God didn't release me from that call. In fact, he said, no, this is what I've done. And I believe God never wastes the hurt. God never wastes the pain. And so God has used that pain. And I began to seek out again the wisdom of those around me. And we began to wonder if it wasn't time to kind of start an independent church. And after lots of guidance, we did. We launched a church 4 years ago called Faith Ignited. And we have grown and grown since. And again, part of the launch of that church was to say, okay, how do we make sure the foundation's good? So as people come to our church, from whatever background they're a part of, how do we help make sure they're taking the right steps forward? And that was part of our then researching of different discipleship steps again. And, of course, I had used and taught those over the years of ministry. But eventually we said, well, let's just write our own book. And again, that's how we got to the book. And our church is an amazing place. We deal with all kinds of people in recovery because I like to say we're all addicted to sin. So we're all in a recovery process. And so out of my past and everything, we often jokingly call ourselves the church for people recovering from church, right? We've all been hurt by a church, and God bless us. We'll probably hurt people as we continue to grow, but we like to joke and say we're the church for people recovering from church.
Yes, I've heard that before, because the churches, a lot of the churches are in by people who like power. So you have to be careful who you fall under the leadership. So you want to make sure you're in the same alignment and that this is not a paycheck for somebody. This is actually a ministry. So you're coaching basketball, you said. So tell us about how did you get to coach basketball? And I understand you're a prolific basketball player.
Well, okay. That may be a bit of a stretch, prolific.
Okay.
I like playing ball. I held my own most of the time when I played. But, I grew up, playing all kinds of sports, and I love to coach. In fact, sometimes when people come to me at church and say, hey, I really need to talk to you about what's going on, I always remind them, I'm not a counselor. We have a church counselor on staff. Go talk to her. I'm a coach. I'm the guy who's going to listen to your story and say, hey, here's three ways to move forward, but let's go. So, again, that's just who I am kind of naturally. That's the way I'm wired and where I'm built is I just love coaching people and helping them move forward in all stages of life, and including and especially moving them closer to Jesus. So I coach basketball from varsity down to little kids ball. And when, again, that incident happened, I was doing junior high basketball for a local school.
It's easy to get somebody when you know they're going to adopt kids. It's easy to attack people with accusations. So, and the system is slow and all that. So there's so many things that can go wrong. And I understand what happened. And if they didn't find anything, then you're innocent. And unfortunately, they drag you through that. You're on the other side now. You're past that. And probably still hurts a little, but I mean, that's the world we live in today. People accuse anybody of anything just to get at them, just to get on them. And the police show up at your house. And the video can be ugly, as you know. But other than that, so tell me what your plans are with your book. There's so many things. Okay, here's what we do at the company. We actually will help you set up events and book signings and things like that. So, or if you need, you probably don't even need it because I know you do a lot of speaking and you travel a lot. And I see that probably to see what things you do. And you do a lot of things with your youth and other programs. So there's just a lot of things, a lot of possibilities there. Because I'm really excited about what you've done. And I think you're going to have great success with it. Spiritual success, maybe monetary as well, probably. I just think it's more needed than anything. It's like one of those things you used to get where people would give them to you for free. They'd pass them out. You know, people are willing, just like anything else, they're willing to buy this and support you. Because the more you support, the more you can do that person. So,
yeah,
you don't get things for free. I mean, nothing's for free anymore. So it's about growing the ministry as well.
Yeah, I'm not very good at self-promotion, and I don't really – again, if people can't remember my name by the end of the talks or the end of the day, actually I kind of think of that as a win if they remember the message. And you know, we didn't write this book because I thought, hey, I'm going to make millions or anything like that. Right. I wrote this book because there was a burning passion within me to say, how do we help the next generation – move closer to Jesus when, again, we're biblically illiterate, when we're starting off in all the wrong places, and that's one of the reasons why we're seeing all kinds of drops and catastrophes in our churches is because, hey, if we don't help people start right, they can't finish well. You know, if someone said, hey, you got to go to this place on the map, but didn't tell you where you were starting and you had no idea, they really didn't help you. And often that's what we do in churches. We go, hey, you got to end up loving Jesus and doing this and this and this. Okay, that's great. How do I get there? I don't really know. Just keep coming on Sunday. And
right.
Again, that's just not enough.
Brilliant.
There's not great clarity there. And so we always talk about, hey, this is where we start. And again, we talk about a direction. You know, it's not like you finish the book, you've done the five steps, and you're there. Again, you're still moving towards Jesus. And so I wrote this really out of a burning passion to help people, to help churches, to help other pastors have a tool and language and a resource that they could use to help their congregation move towards Jesus. And so that's really the heart of it. And whatever God does with it now is just an extra blessing and really all fun now. The hard part was getting what was burning within my soul on paper in a way that made sense to when other people read it so that they could use it as a tool.
Yeah, and, you know, it's not the fact that you're looking for recognition or anything or your name and life, but you just happen to be the person to write the book. That's how it usually happens. So, and you may get recognition for it naturally or whatever, but the book is the most important thing, but your name is attached to it. Your name's on the book.
Yeah.
So that's what happened to me. I wrote my book, and you know, I know a lot of people now, and people know me more than I ever thought would, and I've had a lot of, if you want to call them breaks, but I'm telling you, a really good book goes a long way, and it changes people, and that's a good thing. The whole goal of the book should be, it should be different from everybody else, for other people to offer. And I like what this says. I like what it teaches. And I like the acronyms. I like the section, how they're divided, and the samples and the cartoons. It's a really good book. I encourage everybody to look for this book. It's on Amazon right now, and it's also on Brownie Fox Publishing. I have a link to Amazon. Once we get our payability back up, then you can buy it off there. We start storing them. So we always like to buy and keep in stock the books. But we're going to probably hit that soon. And just like you talked about adopting kids. So our next book is about foster care, and that's coming out real soon as well. This is one
needed
of the
conversation topic to talk about.
Yes, right. So we've been wanting to add more books, and this is what we're doing. We're up to like 9 books now, and little by little. So I am very happy to have you on board, being part of our author stable. And based on this book, I can imagine the next ones are going to be awesome too. And all our other new authors, we even have a 9-year-old kid who wrote a book, Elephant and the Rhino. Fantastic. He wrote the book, and he did the illustrations, and because it's crazy how this world works and people that have talent, just like your book. Something that I was excited about when you told me, and now it's here. And now we have that book available. And it's time to get this book out. And so we actually do the marketing for that, and we'll push it different places. And you might have to speak different places, like Zoom calls or in person. We'll see how that goes, or you can control that yourself. But we're not going
to
force anything on you. Good idea.
Yeah. So let me share real quick. Like I'm just starting to get feedback because people have picked it up and are starting to read it, and I got a message yesterday through social media, and the lady said to me, she goes, I've been looking for something like this for a long time to use at our church. She goes, I love the fact that the language is simple. She goes, the way you write is relatable. She said, your stories are compelling. They're emotionally, she goes, I connect with them. And she said, but it's so simple and clear. She goes, I don't know how we don't already have this resource. And I was just overwhelmed and flattered a little bit by her message. And that's not a verbatim, but that's basically what she said to me. And I just hope that other people have a similar experience as they use it.
Right. And I know this is a guide, but I think you should get ready for autographs and books. It's going to come. Trust me. People are going to send them to you, and then you have to send them back. I don't even give you the postage. It's kind of a weird thing. So, but that comes with having a book out there. And I think, your book's like 235 pages, I believe, somewhere around there, maybe a little more. And, this is something, and physically it looks like a book. We haven't got a copy yet, but we will be adding it to our physical library. But the one of the coolest things is, hey, sign my book. I had that happen to me. I signed so many books. I'm not really good at it. I don't write very well. But people want that signature, and you're going to have that. When you go on these events and you take 50 books with you or something, you're going to sit there and sign, and say good luck, best wishes. So you got to get used to that.
A funny story like that, at the end of our service, we have a bunch of people, and I love this about our church. I love this about our church family who are in recovery ministry of some sort. And so Sunday, when the service ends, they need a signature because they get to count this as part of their group therapy that they're moving through. And so Sunday, I'm signing notes for people saying, yep, you were here. And I got home and I'm laying in bed and I'm talking to my wife and I just suddenly start laughing. And she's like, what are you laughing at? I said, well, I'm replaying Sunday morning and I'm just thinking like, it probably looks like, hey, Aaron finishes the sermon and people are coming up to get his autograph because it was such a great message. I said, that's not really what we want people who are new to think, but she goes, it's okay. But again, it was just a funny moment where it's like, hey, that's what that looks like, but that's not what really is going on.
Right. But yeah, that comes into play with the books too. When you take, let's say you take 50 books somewhere, and then they're all going to want you to sign it. I've never been anywhere they didn't want it signed by the author, by me or the other books that I had that we put out. They always want that. So get a real nice pen or a couple of them, and then be ready. It's like magic. So
well, I love getting to know people. I love hearing their stories. So hopefully, I get to sit down with some of them when I do that, and they can tell me their story, and maybe somehow the resource, the 5 steps have impacted their life and their ministry, and equipped them to help others move closer to Jesus.
Right, and there's some really awesome people out there that that they go all through all the details of your book, and they'll talk about it. They want to talk to you about it, or that relative doesn't want to talk about it. So I think this, I'll tell you what, I have a lot of friends, pastor friends, that would love to have this book around the country. So I'm gonna get them a link to that, or they're part of the ministries. But I think this is much needed. I think they will love to get this. So
I'm honored to hear that.
I hope that you enjoyed this interview, and I appreciate you coming on. but I'll be mindful of your time. I know pastors can talk forever.
We have a Girl Scout troop coming out to the farm. We're going to do horse lessons with them, and then I got a baseball game we're going to go watch for my son. So,
awesome. So thank you for coming on. Thanks for being a guest, and thanks for joining Granny Fox Publishing as one of the newest authors. And have a good day, sir. I appreciate your work, and I'll be talking to you soon.
Thank you, and I'm honored to be part of the team, and I've been blessed with this interview, Kevin. Thank you very much.
You are so welcome. And I do remember the interview you gave me, a few months ago.
You did an amazing job with that. It was a huge help.
Well, thank you. Thank you. All right, we'll be seeing you around, sir, and have a great day and a blessed day. Thank you.
Blessings, Kevin. Blessings, everyone who takes time to read the book. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, that was Pastor Dr. Aaron Shevington, and he's pastor here in Ohio. He's in the Fairborn area. Anyway, this book is fantastic. You guys need this. Think about buying it. Go to Amazon.com and look for the title, Moving Toward Jesus, A Five-Step Guide to Discipleship. And you can also get it on BrownieFoxPublishing.com. Love for you to visit there. We're doing well. We're getting more and more authors and more books. The more books you have, the better off you are. That's how it works. Why is it the more books? Because you have variety. It's not about making money or anything. It's all about communicating and putting your stuff out there and contributing to the readership in the world or wherever you want to be. Your state, your hometown, your family, your friends, other countries. It's weird, really weird. I can look my book up and it's being sold all over the world. It's just insane. I can't believe this is happening sometimes. So it's an awesome thing to be an author. I encourage anybody, if you have something on your mind, you have a book that you want to do, let me know. Submit it to us, BrownieFoxPublishing@gmail.com. So that's it for the show today. It's not Wednesday, it's Saturday. It's the opportunity I had to do this based on my personal business, whatever. I'm going to be in Seattle next week, so I won't be here for Wednesday next week. I might just replay this. We'll see. I'll see how that works. I could do it on the road. It's a little harder to do in a hotel room, but it is what it is. So everybody, take care, and God bless America. Right.